like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Lori Shepler, who presides over CityTheKitty.com, perhaps the most significant and influential website dealing with feline declaw surgery, offering information ranging from veterinarians who refuse to perform the procedure to pending legislation to ban declaw surgery in a fistful of states, and a good deal more occasionally, including independent research that Shepler herself conducts. Shepler traveled an unusual path to top national declaw expert, having worked for 25 years as a staff photographer for the Los Angeles Times, being part of teams that were awarded the Pulitzer Prize. City the Kitty is Shepler's cat, a distinctive and photogenic feline. Shepler's photos of City have turned the cat into a social media sensation, and the pictures are also featured in the new book, the foreword written by Dr. Jennifer Conrad, the veterinarian, founder of the Paw Project, and key figure in the anti-declaw world. She's been a guest on this show many times, by the way. We'll hear more about the book, the website, City himself, and more in just a few minutes here when I play back the interview I recorded Sunday with Lori Shepler. First, though, we're going to hear an animal song, as we're sometimes want to do here on Talking Animals. This one seems particularly germane to the conversation with Lori that we'll hear in a moment. This is Nico Case with I'm an Animal on Talking Animals. That was a great Nico Case with I'm an Animal on Talking Animals. Now let's play back my interview with Lori Shepler, recorded Sunday. This is Lori Shepler on Talking Animals.
Hey, Duncan. Thanks a lot for having me.
You bet. So it seems like a big leap, or maybe just an unlikely path, to go from award-winning LA Times photographer to expert on and staunch opponent to declawing cats. Try to trace that path for me. How did you first become interested in declaw?
Well, in 2009, I was laid off from my job at the Los Angeles Times when they were having lots of layoffs and newspapers were going downhill. And then, basically in a nutshell, a little cat showed up in the front of my house about, I would say, 3 weeks later. And he was in the gutter. He was dirty. He was rolling around hungry. And so then I started feeding him, and he would come back every morning and lay in the front of the house, the area there. So I just kept feeding him, and I thought, well, maybe somebody just isn't feeding him the food he likes. But so then I started trying to find if he had a home. I took him to the vet to see if he had a microchip, and nobody came forward. He didn't have a microchip. So I kept feeding him, and then eventually I let him inside, and the first thing he did is he went straight to the litter box.
Okay.
So I thought, that's really interesting. And then I basically, because I started taking pictures of him, he was really different. Like, he would get up on the ping pong table and want to join the game. He would just do really funny things. So, of course, since I was out of work, although I actually started working for the wire services, so I was freelancing whenever they would call me.
Sure.
But I thought, well, let me just start taking pictures of this cute little cat. So then my friends were seeing some of my photos. They said, you should start a Facebook page. So then I started the Facebook page, and it took off. And basically, somehow the Animal Planet noticed and asked if we wanted to be on My Cat from Hell show with Jackson Galaxy. And then they did another show called Bad Dogs, which to this day, those were filmed in 2010, and they're still playing reruns of those.
Wow.
So that's kind of how that happened.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a lot of stuff I want to probably get into in a little bit more detail, starting with, so you're obviously an accomplished photographer, and you start taking pictures of this cat. By the way, how did City get his name?
Well, we noticed that he had like a club tail, and his thumbs were different, which is polydactyl. So It was basically, we were thinking of like something to that effect, but then we just thought instead of CT, we were going to call him CT, but then City sounded better. So that's kind of how that.
I see.
It's just an odd choice, but
no,
it just came.
So instead of shortening something, it was sort of expanding the CT letters.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Cool. Uh-huh. What I'm starting to ask then is, so you're obviously a accomplished photographer, and so sort of natural to take pictures of this cat that showed up on your door and kept showing up, and then you took him in. But what was it when you were taking those pictures that struck you? It sounded like there was something unusual about his reaction. Was it just that he was a bit of a ham, or was there some other quality to him? Why did you kind of keep taking photos and think, hey, oh yes, I'm a photographer, but there's something unusual about when I take pictures of this cat?
Yes. Well, basically, I've had cats my whole life, so I know most of them just kind of lay around. They don't do much, but he seemed very receptive to the camera. Like, he would just kind of, in a way, pose. And then when I saw he would get into everything more than most cats, I know most cats are pretty curious, but it was all the time. He was wanting to follow me around. He was just doing, you know, getting upside down and things. I mean, it just was something that is hard to explain. But if people see the photos, they'll see what I mean, because most cats do not do the things that he does.
So he was just different pretty much from the get-go.
Yeah, exactly. And he seemed to just be a natural at all that. And I mean, it sounds odd, but he kind of saved my life in some ways, you know, because it was difficult times then. And I guess I saved his life in some ways.
No, it sounds like you guys came along at the right time for each other, for sure.
Yeah.
So, Lori, then, so you said you, in the wake of this, you got put up a Facebook page with photos of City. And so, right from the get-go, were people really responding, or what sort of reactions were those pictures generating?
Well, it was mainly they were amazed at them, and they were laughing, and they said it brought them joy. I mean, it just somehow took off. I wasn't trying to get followers, but it, I guess, word of mouth. And then, you know, I'd get notes from people saying, oh, my mother was dying and we were in the hospital and we were looking at City's YouTube videos on her last day, or your pictures bring so much joy into our lives. So then I just thought, wow, this is a good thing. So I'm going to keep doing it, and I'm going to post as many as I can. And the photos kept coming. And so it was mainly people just felt a lot of laughter and joy when they looked at his photos.
So basically they were saying, hey, give us more of this. This is fantastic.
Yes, exactly.
That's great.
And I didn't know much about social media. I just was, you know, I never was into that. So it was fun for me. It was fun and rewarding to see people getting, you know, going there to get joy and happiness.
Yeah. And like you say, it was kind of at a time where it probably suited you on a few levels to have kind of a cool outlet with nice encouragement for your photography in light of job change and what had happened at the times, et cetera. So,
I mean, I look back on that, and I actually am happy that I got laid off, to be honest with you, because my plan B is working out even just as rewarding, if not more rewarding than an amazing career at the LA Times for 25 years.
Okay, well, that's a big statement. Let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Lori Scheppler, who presides over citythekitty.com, probably the definitive website, not run by a veterinarian, dealing with the feline declaw procedure, providing information ranging from veterinarians who refuse to do the surgery to pending legislation to outlaw declaw and much more. This interview was recorded Sunday. So, Lori, how did you initially then, I assume this sort of dovetails with the City of the Kitty story, how did you initially become interested in the whole feline declaw procedure, more simply referred to as declawing cats?
Well, I think it was around 3 years ago, I think close to this month, a cat named Cassandra, the cat, it's actually a declawed cat, sent me a comment on one of the photos. I think it was a photo of City inside a Friskies box with his arm out with his claws. It's a pretty amazing photo.
Okay.
It's like he's got huge claws. So it's just his arm coming out of a box. And she wrote on there, wow, are those claws real? And then she left a comment saying, you should look at the Paw Project and help this cause. But I didn't know what that was. So I looked into it and spoke with Dr. Conrad. And I was just blown away that it was such a common thing to do this to cats. And then the more I looked into it, I realized this is not just taking off their nails. This is a serious amputation procedure. And I don't know what happened, but I just all of a sudden I thought, I need to help. I need to save all these cats that are having to go through this. And I don't know if it was, it just seemed like a calling.
Yeah.
So I just dedicated everything to helping the cause. And I guess I'm a person that when I put my mind to something, I just want to accomplish it. But I realized after 3 years, it's not an easy thing to get this banned, you know, even though it's animal cruelty and abuse and torture and it harms a cat for its lifetime. It's not something that's easily banned because it's so ingrained in so many cat owners that do this. And in the veterinary profession, you know, it's a $1 billion business. So that's kind of how it started.
Let's back up a little bit, too, from there, just because over the years, I've done a number of shows about declaw, most of them, in fact, with Dr. Conrad, who you allude to as the founder of the Paw Project. But I think it might be unwise, even at this point, to assume everyone listening today understands exactly what the surgery involved. So kind of alluded to it as an amputation. But can you just take a moment and explain what happens when a cat undergoes the declaw surgery?
Well, it's just they amputate the last bone in the cat's paw that the nail is attached to, because if they don't take the whole bone, then the nail will grow back. So they either take it with the guillotine clipper, which is how it started in the 50s. I would have to say that probably around at least 30% of vets still use that method, which a lot of times they just take that and they cut the bone, which sometimes it cuts part of the bone and leaves bone chips, which is even more painful.
Yeah.
Or they use the scalpel, or they use a laser, which now a lot of them are touting that is, you know, pain-free. There's a lot of veterinarians are saying it's pain-free, and that's very scary because nothing is pain-free. You know, they're burning off that last bone. And
yeah, it's still amputation, no matter how it's achieved, really, right?
Yeah, so basically, the cats are left to walk on what was amputated, which I'm going to tell you that my belief, based on other veterinarians that I've spoke with, studies, all that, is that it causes pain for the rest of the cat's lifetime in some form.
Well, and then there's all the byproducts of that I guess we can talk about now, which is how that affects their use, or many of them, at least their use of the litter box, and it's painful to use the litter box, and they stop, and then that usually leads to trouble with their humans. I mean, that's just one of the issues, but that's a significant one, just because, among others, that's...
Oh, sure.
Yeah, one of those that gets them often relinquished from the home because the people get exasperated that the cat no longer uses the litter box.
Yeah, so, well, you know, the majority of the veterinarians that declaw cats, they say they don't want it banned because they don't want to see cats euthanized. But the problem is that there are thousands of cats every year that are euthanized, declawed cats, in shelters because of the behavioral issues they got after they were declawed. Those are facts. I mean, even the ASPCA says Now, in their new position statement, they don't want a loft because on the rare occasion, they don't want to see a cat euthanized, and therefore it should be declawed. But if there are thousands of cats being declawed cats being euthanized, then why don't they focus on that and then just try to rehome those, quote, rare occasions, you know, of a cat needing a declaw?
Well, and that's one of the things that's interesting, and we'll get a bit more into veterinarians or at least veterinary medical associations' position and stuff in a moment. But yeah, I mean, one of the things that's so striking about the whole declaw world is how backwards some of the thinking is or some of the positions are. And you just sort of touched on one where the people that are in favor of declaw say they want to reduce the prospect of cats being euthanized. But with these with the litter box issues that we just talked about, and then, of course, also a very common thing when a cat gets declawed is since they don't have their claws to function, fight, defend themselves, whatever, they start biting in place of that. So anyway, those are just two of the things that often start happening with a declawed cat. And again, their humans are saying, well, we can't have this. So they're not using their box or going elsewhere. Now they're biting all the time. So off you go to the shelter, and then, if another cat ends up in a shelter, that's more likely a scenario for being euthanized. But anyway.
Oh, yeah. And the problem is the cat owners, they'll say, oh, my cat's fine. He's happy and healthy, you know. And the problem is cats are so notorious for hiding their pain.
Yeah.
I mean, cats have wounds that you would not even know that they're hurt, but they don't show their pain like dogs do. And they don't, you know, these cat owners, I mean, it's a fact that many of these declawing veterinarians are deceiving their cat owners' clients because they don't think there's a problem with it. And, you know, these cat owners don't realize that cats need their claws and their toes for scratching to exercise their back. And there's a lot of health benefits. I mean, these poor cats get arthritis in their paws. As they age, their back muscles are just really weak. And you see a lot of declawed cats that are fat and overweight. And it's such a bad thing. And the sad part is that when the AVMA, I would have to say promoted this as a way for scratching issues, they didn't do any studies to see what the long-term or short-term effects of it were. Just took off, and it was promoted.
Yeah. No, it's a very unusual veterinary element. It's sort of singular, really, as far as I can tell, that, like you say, there weren't studies, there weren't peer-reviewed studies to speak of on this, and it came into being in a weird way to begin with in a letter to the editor in a vet medical journal. So, I mean, everything about it is odd, and that, especially that it has continued to be practice at all, much less supported by vets. So we're going to come back to that in a sec, just especially with the positions of some of those vet medical associations. But when people actually hearing some of the stuff that we're saying, you know, when they learn what declaw really is, especially if they were otherwise envisioning something quite benign, like, hey, this is just kind of like a pedicure. This is just like when we clip our nails, except for that's on cats. Obviously, people are often very, very upset, and some are, of course, horrified. But for you, raising awareness about declaw and trying to end the practice has become way more than just like I'm upset about this. It's become a major passion, a major cause. Why? What has driven you in that way?
I would just have to say because I see so much suffering and the lives of cats are being ruined and the profit side of it. It's like so appalling that a profession that's all about healing and helping animals and doing no harm, I would say 80% of veterinarians declaw cats. And it's just so, it's really disheartening. And on the other side, it just seems so corrupt that the veterinary associations wouldn't be working hard to help us end it, you know. But instead, they're putting it on people like us who have to find the studies that prove that it harms the cat. Well, why aren't they helping us with the alternatives, like the simple nail trims and the education that there's soft paws, you have to have sturdy scratchers. Why aren't all these organizations working really hard to do that side of it? Because they know so many cat owners don't really believe it's a bad thing. I mean, people send me posts from Facebook that people have posted all the time. There was one a few days ago, a lady got her cat declawed and somebody said something to her like, well, your cat's toes are gone. And she actually said, I think I would know if my cat's toes were gone. And she took a picture of the cat's paw. And it's like, wow, these people just seem so clueless about the truth of this.
Then people can go to cityofthekitty.com. I happen to notice that. And of course, you basically have like a screenshot of the exchange, but of course, the name's blacked out. But yeah, it's a perfect example of, I think, a lot of people, especially because I think the way this comes down a lot of the times is that when people get a cat, adopt a cat, do whatever to get a new cat in the family, they want to get it spayed and neutered and dewormed and do all the right things, vaccinations, whatever it might be. And for a lot of veterinary hospitals and practices, there's a package that includes declaw in addition to those things that they know they want, and they don't know what exactly, again, the declaw procedure involves. So they say, yeah, let's have the whole package. So,
oh, sure.
I mean, some people are doing it by design, but some people are, and I think that's why the person that's said, I think I would know if my cat were missing their toes. I think that's a classic example. I mean, it's sad, but it's like a classic thing of like, I don't think there was anything malevolent in this person's desire to do that. And again, it may have been a byproduct of that package. But the fact remains that their cat ended up declawed somehow without them knowing it. So,
I get emails all the time from cat owners that had their cats declawed like 10 years ago. One lady 15 years ago, she found out what it really was. She feels so guilty after all these years. I mean, it truly affects human lives too, on the ones that felt like they were totally deceived by their veterinarians.
Yeah.
And they're just, you know, there's a study that I did. I mean, you can often call veterinary practices and ask, you know, can I get a price for a neuter? And they'll say, do you want a declaw with that? I mean, they actually offer it to you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a menu of services. Hey, well, while you're at it, do you want to get this? And again, that's why I think it's so important, your website and trying to do interviews like this. And of course, all kinds of things that the Paw Project and others have done, because as people become aware of what the declaw procedure really involves and what it means for the cat long term, most people then would never have it done. But a lot of people don't know until after the fact. Let me, again, let folks know, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Lori Scheppler, formerly an award-winning photographer for the LA Times, now operates cityofthekitty.com, a website that serves as a rich, deeply informative resource about various aspects of the feline declaw surgery. This interview was recorded Sunday. So another reaction, Lori, that I think people often experience upon learning what declaw surgery really is and what its impact is on the cats who are declawed is wondering why the procedure isn't illegal, especially as people find out or know that more than 20 countries have banned declaw, and 8 cities in California, where I'm speaking to you, I think is one of them. So the United States is far behind countries like England, Australia, Spain, Slovenia, but some states seem poised to help correct this a little bit. So tell me a little bit about the states that currently seem to be serious about implementing legislation banning declaw and where things stand in those states.
Well, so far there's 4 bills introduced in states, and it's New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and West Virginia. The 2 that are most active are New Jersey and New York. And last year, the New York bill was stopped, as they always are, by the Veterinary Association there. So it's going to be back. They're both, New Jersey and New York are going to be back on the table in, I think, a few weeks. So that's good news. But the veterinary associations will fight with everything they can. I know last year, the New York Veterinary Medical Association spent over $100,000 to stop the bill.
And
so that's, you know, really sad, because they could be using this money to educate cat owners. They say a medical procedure shouldn't be dictated by the government or people, activists that want to stop it, things like that.
I guess at the risk of asking a kind of rhetorical question that may also be a cynical question, why are these veterinary associations opposed to the legislation?
Well, I'm sure it's all about money, because the majority of their vets declaw cats, and a lot of them make great money doing it, and they can use the excuse that they don't want to see cats euthanized, but the problem is, as in any state, in New York, wherever, there's a lot of declawed cats that are being euthanized. And I'm 100% sure that they just want to keep the ability to keep declawing, and they want the power to be able to tell that that's how it should be. They say it's a medical procedure. I mean, it was just appalling how they have to go about things, because they have to lie about it. So my feeling is, how I was raised, is if you have to lie about something, you're doing something wrong. But they even went to the extent to where the Long Island Veterinary Association president sent an email to all her vet members and told them that even if they're personally opposed to declawing, they should oppose this bill because it is a medical procedure, and the medical procedure shouldn't be dictated by the government or social media.
Wow.
They're actually asking people to go against what they believe in, a doctor, what they believe in is right or wrong, and go against that.
And Lori, in that request, was there any kind of veiled or other kind of threat to people who didn't kind of fall into the corporate line there?
I didn't see any. I mean, I get a lot of whistleblowers sending me things, people inside veterinary practices, people...
Yeah.
There's a lot of people helping me, and I just received that note. But, I mean, they just, the New York Veterinary Medical Association did everything they could to stop the bill, and they always seem to have to lie about things and say it's not done that often, and it's so not true. I mean, the New Jersey, they came out, and their spokes vet actually lied to the legislators on so many aspects. He said that bone is not removed to them.
Yeah.
The bone is always removed, the last bone in the cast toe.
Yeah.
He said that there's no behavioral studies showing, there's no study showing that declawing causes behavioral studies. I mean, they put up a Facebook page about the bill, but it said, love your cast, New Jersey, and it was saying, you know, we're against euthanasia, but basically it was about the bill. So people were liking the page thinking, well, of course we don't want cats euthanized.
Right.
You know what I mean? They turned it around and they said, well, thanks for all 7,500 likes, New Jersey.
Yeah.
When after investigating, 2% of the likes were from New Jersey. The rest were from the rest of the world. And they paid for ads for that Facebook page, too.
Sure. Yeah, it's like a push-pull, like, hey, if you phrase it a certain way and it's confusing enough, people will say, yeah, I'm absolutely in support of
sure.
this. Yeah.
And then, you know, they said the New Jersey Veterinary Medical Association said they did a study and they did it of like 400 veterinary practices, 100 got back with them, and the average practice in New Jersey does 9 declaws. Well, I just thought, well, let me just do a study myself. So I did a study with the help of some of my researchers, and after over 100 practices, including board members of the New Jersey Veterinary Medical Association, I found that 72% of veterinary practices did declaws often, regularly, and commonly. And it was, and you know, they say that, oh, all of our vets use a laser. Well, guess what? 30% use the old-fashioned guillotine, 30% use a scalpel, and 30% use a laser. So it's not all their vets are not using a laser, which they seem to be touting now that, you know, it's more humane or things like that, but it's not. I mean, they buy these $35,000 lasers and they have to pay for them.
Yeah.
And also, the board members, 9 of the board member practices, they had 3 of them actually were using the guillotine method. So only 4 of them were using the laser. So even with their own board members, they all weren't using a laser. I think they just have to lie about things. I mean, their spokesperson even said it's similar to removing a human fingernail.
It's interesting that, I guess the lies are required, because with so much, apparently at least, documented information about what the procedure actually involves, and especially what for most cats, there's a range of how severe the effects are and the pain and stuff, but they're all pretty bad, the ill effects of in the aftermath of declaw. So it's just amazing that, of all people, the vet associations are the ones saying that's not true and it doesn't work this way and we don't do it that much anyways. And that's why I love the argument, we don't do it that much anyways. Well, then why, if it's not that big of a deal and it's not that constitute that big of a part of your practice, why would you object to this legislation to outlaw it? And
exactly.
Yeah.
Why not just work on those quote rare cases, which is not a rare case. Around 2 million cats a year are declawed in America.
Yeah.
And that's not rare. I mean, even the AVMA is very deceitful on how they go about their position statement. They said something like there's no declawed cats have no more behavioral problems when compared to a control group. Well, that's in their main statement, but guess what? There have been no control group studies. They haven't taken like 50 cats and declawed half and, you know, didn't declaw the other and then studied them. So that's like such a deceitful comment when they know there have been no studies like that.
Well, and again, people that aren't able to pay attention, they got a lot of things going on and just aren't as steeped in it as you might be or I might be, are going to probably accept that at face value.
Yeah. No. And they quote that. A lot of times I see people quoting that. The AVMA, here's their position statement. But that's the sad part. I mean, it all revolves around money. All these big organizations, you have the American Animal Hospital Association, you have the Cat Friendly Feline Practitioners. They all allow declawing in their practices. They have statements that say they oppose it, but they don't enforce it. And, you know, a lot of these AHA places, Standard of Excellence hospitals, there are some that don't even require pain meds for two-paw declawed cats, but for four-paw, they require the pain meds, things like that. There's a story that I found out about through a whistleblower, actually, and it was in California. The owners took the cats in to get them declawed, but then they changed their mind because they read something online about it, and the vets at this AHA hospital, cat-friendly vet, AVMA vet, they actually talked the owners out of using the humane alternative. They said, well, you shouldn't try the nail caps because they might fall off, which they don't fall off. They work really well. But they wanted the $1,300 to declaw all three cats, and all three cats had complications and have had their paws amputated. I mean, it's the most unimaginable nightmare story you'll ever know. But all these, there's so many cats being harmed like this that you don't hear about behind the scenes. That's another part of it.
And that story you just told with the $1,300 that they obviously didn't want to see walk out the door. Since you're obviously like such a great resources and such great research on cityofthekitty.com, what would you say, I'm sure it varies regionally and in other ways too, but just ballpark, what would you say you found is the kind of typical fee for a declaw procedure?
There's really no typical fee because you can go to places like, I found places in Oklahoma that will do it for around $60. No pain meds. They just use ketamine, which is just puts them out. But it's just places like that. Or you can go to other places that charge around $1,000.
That's quite a range.
So,
jeez.
Yeah, it varies. I mean, it's a huge moneymaker. And all these people that are trying to stop it, the leaders in the veterinary associations are trying to, because it's a billion-dollar business in America on so many levels. And they don't, the reason the AHA and cat-friendly people and AVMA, they don't want to alienate their veterinarians because most of them declaw, so they don't want to lose their membership. You know, I mean, an AHA membership is at least $1,000 a year. They don't want to lose those vets, yet they let their vets put out ads of no more scratching furniture on Facebook. They let them do anything they want. They have there's a YouTube video of AHA and cat-friendly practices saying that, you know, we like to declaw them when they're 2 to 3 months old, even showing a four-paw declawed cat. I mean, it's so appalling when these people are supposed to be all cat-friendly and the standard of excellence in veterinary profession, you know?
And by the way, for people listening who may not be clear on some of the acronyms, what does AHA stand for?
Oh, the American Animal Hospital Association.
Right. Okay, cool. And let me, again, let folks know, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Lori Scheppler, who presides over cityofthekitty.com, a terrific website providing a wealth of information about the feline declaw procedure. This interview was recorded Sunday. So, Lori, when you look at all those kind of machinations by vets and vet associations and hospital associations, and as also trying to look at the legislative landscape that we touched on a few minutes ago, what is your level of optimism about the practice of declaw ending in this country? I mean, do you think that's coming? Is it still going to be waylaid and delayed by all the money and opposition? Or what's that look like to you?
Well, I'm pretty optimistic just because that's what kind of person I am, despite seeing all this that has been going on. I think in around 5 years it will be banned in America. That's my feeling. Because, you know, we've had some good news lately. The Canadian Veterinary Medical Association just last week came out and said they oppose declawing. I mean, completely, with no excuses. So things like that are changing. I actually worked to help inspire North Shore Animal League, the shelter, the biggest shelter in the world, actually. And they wrote a letter of support for the bill in New York. So that was huge.
And aren't some bigger vet hospital chains either on the cusp of committing to no more declaw, or maybe have already made that commitment but haven't put it in place?
Well, Banfield, they came out and they said no more elective declawing, but I've researched it, and many of the places still are, but now they have their vets talk to the cat owners, and now they are saying that they truly do it as a last resort, or some don't do it at all, which is a good step. It seems like people want baby steps with this, when I'm more like, if this is animal cruelty and abuse and wrong, it should end now. It should have ended yesterday.
We're looking for bigger than baby steps here. Let's speed it up.
It's been long enough. It's been like 65 years. I mean, let's not take any more baby steps. Let's end this. So I'm optimistic. I think it's like when these things start to happen, then those other big organizations will say, this is wrong. It's like, how it is, the public pressure. If that starts to be overwhelming and they start to feel, well, this looks really bad.
Yeah.
They'll do it for that. But they should have done it 10 years. They should have done it a long time ago, because it's wrong.
Yeah.
And they know it's wrong. They all know it's wrong.
Yeah, sometimes just doing it for the right reason. But I also think, like, public pressure and something like, of course, going to mention, I'm glad you did first, the Canadian Medical Association doing that, is that sometimes people, whether it's a state, like we were talking about the states that seem like in the process of passing legislation, sometimes people don't want to be first, or there's too much other pressure of one kind or another to not be first. But once somebody takes that first step, a state does ban it, then others, I think, it's easier to get those things passed in the wake of that. So I think the resistance starts to wear down, hopefully, very quickly.
Oh, sure. And in New Jersey, it passed in the assembly 43-10. And then all of a sudden it got pulled. The bill got pulled, but it's going to be back in a couple of weeks, And I'm sure that really upset the New Jersey Veterinary Medical Association. And they're doing everything they can, I'm sure, behind the scenes to try to figure out now what do they do.
Yeah.
But, it's a David and Goliath fight. I mean, these people have lots of money in the associations, and we don't. Our side doesn't, unfortunately, and it's we need the public's help for this, and that's why people should follow the Paw Project and City the Kitty. I'm on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and we just we also need like a spokesperson, a celebrity, and nobody seems to want to step up and help us in a big way. There's been a few of them over the years that have, tweeted different things, but that's all they do. Nobody wants to be to help us, but we really need somebody like that too.
Yeah, I think that would help really galvanize this effort for sure. And again, it may just be that it's kind of an odd thing that, again, people are very slow to find out the true story behind, and that unfortunately probably includes a lot of celebrities who really, if they got the picture, and just so many amazing animal loving celebrities out there, that if they really understood this, they might say, I'll lend my voice to this, or I'll become the public face of this. So
they would be heroes if they did.
I'd like to think at least that's just around the corner, just like I think a lot of nice developments and things that are going to make this a lot better. So I just want to urge people, we're just in the last moment or two of our time here, Lori, but again, citythekitty.com, and there's so much information, so many resources, some of these legislative things we've talked about, all kinds of information, vets that don't declaw and how you can find out about your own vet. I mean, there's just a ton of great information if you're a cat person at all, that you should be going there to find out all kinds of things. And speaking of City the Kitty, who is something of a media star, not only just all the Facebook pictures and stuff we talked about kind of earlier in our conversation, but you also mentioned that he was featured on My Cat from Hell and has his own book. We'll get to the book in just one sec. But when you say they invited him on, I guess, on My Cat from Hell, was there a behavioral issue that, I mean, typically at least the people that go on that show, there is a behavior issue of some kind that star cat behaviorist Jackson Galaxy is helping address. Was this related to that, or was Kitty just such a cool feline celebrity that they just invited him on to make an appearance?
No, he was, he's a wild cat. I mean, I'd have to say he needs to be exercised a lot, and he just was bullying my other cat. So it was like he would actually tackle her. And so, you know, Jackson showed that I needed to exercise City, keep him busy, just wear him out, you know, and that's what you need. You need things around to play with him. And so that was the issue there.
And then everybody that got along fine after that?
Yeah, it was a lot better. I mean, anytime, you know how cats are.
Yeah.
You exercise them and play with them, and they sleep for another, 5 hours?
Right, yeah.
They sleep a lot.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, that sounds like, once again, Jackson Galaxy came through. So, and then there's the City of the Kitty books. Now, I haven't seen the book, but I assume it's largely fab photos, or are there other things in there as well? Or?
Oh, yeah, it's actually around 80 pages of just his funny photos. It's a very positive, funny, uplifting book. And Dr. Conrad actually did the foreword in the book.
Oh, great.
So it's a really cool foreword, and just the story about City, and the rest are all color, fun photos and cute little sayings.
So how does one get that book through the website, or what's the best way if someone said?
CityTheKitty.com.
Okay, so you can go there and you can
kind of, go there and just pick it up. And, you know, I've worked on it for around 6 months. I just really wanted to do this. I first found him, but I just got so caught up in this cause. I mean, I literally worked every waking hour on it. But then I thought I need to do something creative, because it's really, I mean, it just can bring you down. It's just so sad to see all the suffering. I mean, it's suffering every single day. So I thought I need to do something creative and get these pictures out. So I think it's a great way just to, you know, have it on your coffee table, and people pick it up and they go, well, who's City the Kitty? And then maybe they won't declaw their cat if they find out.
There you go. It's
about City.
It's a conversation starter amongst many other things. Coffee table book.
Exactly.
And it's like the best version of cat photos on Facebook, except it's by a hotshot photographer. So that's cool. You can't go
wrong. Rave reviews. He's getting rave reviews on his book. Everybody loves it.
That's great. Okay, Lori. Well, I think we're sort of nearing the end of our time here, but I just want to thank you. This again, we've been speaking with Lori Scheffler. The website, one more time, is citythekitty.com. Again, whether you're interested in the book or just interested in finding out more about declaw or legislation efforts that are pending, or just all kinds of really important information surrounding that issue, that's the place to go. So, Lori, thanks again for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thanks so much, Duncan. It's been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks again.
My thanks again to Lori Scheffler and that fabulous feline, City the Kitty. Right now it's time to step into the comedy corner. This is Daniel Sloss with a piece called Gay Penguins. In today's comedy corner on Talking Animals.
I was in Edinburgh Zoo, and the reason I was in Edinburgh Zoo, and I was with the penguins, I was allowed to go in there and interact with the penguins, and the zookeeper person I was with was going around, and she was like, and this is where they eat, and this is where they sleep, and this is where they swim, and these are our two gay penguins. And I went, what? She went, these are our two gay penguins. And I was like, one more time, please. She went, these are our two gay penguins. I was like, why did you show me anything else? Wasting my time with giraffes. Tell the rest of the animals to take the week off, because this is the zoo now, okay? And the reason they are gay penguins is the greatest reason I've ever heard. As an audience, can you tell the difference between a male and female penguin?
No.
No, neither can most male penguins. And penguins mate for life. So what happens is, one penguin will be walking along and he'll drop his keys or something, I don't know, but he'll bend over. And one of the other ones that hasn't been paying attention will just be like, damn. And he'll run up and he'll have his way, and then he'll come back up and he'll start low-fiving all of his friends, because penguins can't high-five. Yeah. And then the other penguin has to stand up and turn around and say, like, yeah, dude, it's Steve. What are you doing? And the first penguin's just like, well, according to penguin law, together forever. Now, she tells me this story, and I am dying with laughter, right? I am happier than I've ever been, and it gets so much better, right? Turns out a couple of years ago, at Edinburgh Zoo, it came to mink season, right, for the penguins, not the zookeepers. And all the straight penguins start having their sex. Two gay penguins, they start having their sex. Right? A couple of weeks later, all the female penguins start to lay their eggs. Two gay penguins, they didn't lay an egg. And they were confused by this. Because they've been doing what everyone else had been doing. Let's be honest, probably more. Living for the weekend. And they had nothing to show for it. And in their confusion, they wandered around their enclosure until they found a rock that was slightly egg-shaped. And they just assumed that this was their egg. That's how it worked. So they put it on their feet, they waddled it back to the nest, where they then spent the next couple of weeks, every hour of every day, taking it in turns, sitting on this rock, waiting for it to hatch, which is obviously adorable, but only because they're penguins. If your friend turned up to your house with a stroller and a boulder, just... Karen, get off my lawn. Get off my lawn. This is unacceptable. Put the rock back. I know it's mine. I saw you pick it up. So the zookeepers were heartbroken because they knew what was going to happen. In a couple of weeks, all the female penguins' eggs were going to hatch to beautiful baby penguins. And the two gay penguins, their rock wasn't going to hatch because I'm not explaining that. But fortunately, in captivity, sometimes female penguins get a bit excited by all the penguins, all the male penguins there, and sometimes they have too many eggs. So the zookeepers took one of the extra eggs and they gave it to the gay penguin parents. And if you go to Edinburgh Zoo, for whatever reason, you can ask any of the zookeepers, you can Google this story, there's at least one penguin in Edinburgh Zoo that has been raised by gay penguin parents. And it is no different from any other penguin, except that it's slightly better dressed.
That was Daniel Sloss with a piece called Gay Penguins, taken from an appearance on Conan. Come up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity rolling into the noon hour. It constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more with contributions from members of the stellar WMNF staff, including, of course, Everyday Ethics with Craig Kopp. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a copy of Pitbull, the amazing acclaimed book by Bronwyn Dickey. Right now, it's time for some animal news and announcements. Coming up this Friday, April 7th, the Humane Society of Tampa Bay will hold the 4th annual Island Paws Party at the Davis Island waterfront home of Nancy and Tom Newman. It's Bash will bring 300-some-odd guests to the island for cocktails, dinner, dancing, silent auction, and raffles to raise much-needed funds for the homeless animals at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay. Perhaps needless to say, given the name of it, the attire is Island Casual. You can find out more by going to humanesocietytampa.org. Also, looking ahead a little bit, you might want to mark your calendar for this. Pet Pals Animal Shelter is gearing up for its big annual Puppy Love Benefit. Going to be held this year, May 13th, from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the historic Coliseum, 535 4th Avenue North, St. Pete. And this is their 15th annual Puppy Love Benefit. The year's theme will be Whiskers in Wonderland. Tickets are available now. The evening's festivities, in this case, we'll also include silent and live auction, 50-50 raffle, dinner, aerialist entertainment by Moving Arts of Tampa Bay, photo booth, all kinds of other stuff, too. So you can go to petpalanimalshelter.com or perhaps search their Facebook page, find out more details about how you can get tickets and other aspects of the event. So saw this and a lawyer friend sent this to me. Wild horse advocates have scored a victory in Nevada in an ongoing legal battle with rural interests who they say want to round up federally protected Mustangs across the West and sell them for slaughter. The 9th U.S. Circus Court of Appeals in San Francisco denied an appeal on Monday by the Nevada Association of Counties and Nevada Farm Bureau Federation. Ranchers in Nevada say the badly overpopulated horse herds are damaging the range and robbing their livestock of forage. Public court's decision upholds an earlier ruling by a federal judge in Reno who dismissed their lawsuit demanding the U.S. Bureau of Land Management expedite widespread roundups across Nevada. And sometimes there's a happy note, the ones that get away sometimes stay away, by which in this case I mean six steers that ran amok on the streets of St. Louis last week after escaping from a neighborhood slaughterhouse, have a new lease on life and a possible future grazing in the lush pasture of a Tennessee animal sanctuary. So these steers were jumped out, I guess, or didn't get into their transport vehicle, and there's pictures of them in traffic eluding their captors. Good for them. May you enjoy your nice life in the sanctuary. I'm Duncan Schultz. You're listening to Talking Animals, but the show website is talkinganimals.net. Time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from Dubbing Up in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, a copy of Bronwyn Dickey's great book, Pitbull, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, or at least animal title. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. All right, can you name that animal tune, or at least animal title? We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Loroy is up next with what amounts to 2 hours of radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, April 12th, and my guest will be Kim Skrovenek, founder of Humane Education Connection, based here in the Tampa Bay area, and its key program for our purposes, at least, Canines Helping Kids in Crisis. Meanwhile, please visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there, too. There are also links to our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook. As much me personally as the show, just given the way the whole Facebook algorithms work and looking for paid posts on the other ones, etc. You can also follow me on Twitter. You can also subscribe to our email newsletter through TalkingAnimals.net to find out about our guests days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. That's all found again at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is WNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Community Conscious Radio, handpicked music and news. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.